This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a community church located in Aurora, Illinois. For more information, go to orchardvalleyonline.com.
Well, as you all know, we are in a series entitled Seasons. And we're taking the next 4 weekends here to talk about the seasons that we all journey through in our lives. Today we're going to talk about winter. And we're trying to make it feel like winter in here, by the way. So we're just trying to create sort of an effect if you're, anyway. Now, last week I had the privilege of opening up our series by talking about fall, which is my favorite time of the year. And of course, some of the words that we use to describe fall, if you remember, are words like beauty and elegance and color and inspiration. Those are the kind of words that people associate with fall. So today, I thought I would begin this morning by sharing some words that I associate with winter, okay? You know, words like death, or words like ice, or hypothermia, wind chill, death, snow, shoveling more snow, buying a snowblower, death, salt trucks, black ice, dead batteries, stuck cars, frostbite, gangrene, thermal underwear, ice fishing, diminished mental capacity. How about recreational eating? and of course, death. I mean, those are the kind of things we associate with winter. Now I know that there are those of you, and perhaps even here in this room today, who say that they just love winter. And so I'll just put this in the form of a question, okay? How many people do you know who spend their working careers living in Florida and then retire to St. Paul, Minnesota? Okay, all right, that's what I thought. You know, I mean, think about it. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, winter is pretty much evil. And I could actually prove that scripturally, but we don't have time to do that today. So turn to your neighbor and say winter is evil. Go ahead. Winter. I mean, think about it. People say things like, well, I'll tell you what, I'll do that when hell freezes over. Okay, imagine that. Okay, the ultimate in human suffering is hell and winter joined together. Well, as you can probably see, I'm just really not a winter guy. But regardless of what we might think about the actual seasons, I want to take a few minutes this morning and talk about another kind of winter. I want to talk about, I guess you could say, really a spiritual winter. The type of winter that you and I experience not out here, but in here, on the inside. Because here's the thing, you can easily hop on a plane and sort of just hightail it out of the cold weather, but unfortunately, there is no place on this earth you can escape to avoid spiritual winter. You know, spiritual winter is sort of that in-between time that we talked about last week, when you've lost something. When something in your life has died and you know that it will never, ever return. Perhaps it's a dream, a business, a job, maybe a person you were dating, and in that case, maybe you're glad that they're gone. But anyway, or maybe you've lost a loved one in your life, and nothing new in your life has arisen to take place of whatever it is you might have lost, and you're just not sure that anything ever will. That's winter. And you know, it's interesting because there are actually certain books in the Bible that almost have sort of this wintry feel to them. We looked at one last week. Ecclesiastes is one of those books. Another one is a book called Job. Many of the Psalms, as you read them, you'll find that these tend to be very wintry books. And I have to believe, man, that it's not by accident that God inspired the scriptures to speak to every area of our lives, not just the summer seasons, not just the spring, but he has given us the scriptures that speak to every possible season we could be in our lives. You know, one of my favorite people in the Bible of all time is a man named David. David knew what it was like to go through these wintry seasons of life. In fact, there are scriptures that David wrote, and when you read them, man, you can just feel the cry of pain and the agony that he's going through. Because see, here's the thing, when you are in winter and you just don't feel very strong, I mean, you don't feel very productive, and sometimes you don't really feel much of anything. Psalm chapter 38 gives us a glimpse into a time when David was in this winter season. Psalm 38, verse 8, David said, "I am feeble and utterly crushed. I groan in anguish of heart. My strength fails me." Man, what an honest conversation with God. That's one of the things I love about David. You know, maybe you've lost a job, or perhaps have experienced some sort of a vocational or business failure, and you feel just this deep sense of sadness in your heart. And not just that, but you almost feel maybe this element of shame, because now without that job that you so have identified with in your life, you just aren't really even sure who you are anymore. Or, and this happens every day to so many, even families right here in this community, you receive a phone call from someone with some sad or even tragic news. And all of a sudden, it's like you're going down the highway at 90 miles an hour, and someone just reaches over and yanks that emergency brake, and you just come to a complete stop. That's winter. You know, maybe you feel like you failed as a parent. You know, things aren't right between you and your kids. Maybe you know, you're spending all sorts of time wondering where and how you went wrong, and wondering if you'll ever be able to put things back together again. Or maybe just like my family, and so many others here, I look out across this room, so many of you, perhaps somebody in your life who you love dearly has died. And maybe you even prayed and prayed and prayed, and it didn't work out how you wanted it to. But you know that your life will never, ever be the same again. Or maybe you've become aware of this deep brokenness inside of you. Maybe it came out of a real dramatic act in your life. Maybe something like adultery or betrayal or deceit. And maybe it involved a broken marriage. Or maybe your reputation and your whole world has just sort of caved in around you. Or maybe it's a pattern. Or a character trait inside of yourself that you just hate, and you've battled it for so long, and maybe how you deal with anger, or how you deal with fear, or how you deal with people, and if you keep busy, or noisy, or successful enough, you're able to distract yourself from this reality. But when you get still, like right now, you become aware that the most painful gap in the world is the gap between the person that you long to be and the person you are. And you sometimes wonder, as big as that gap is, if it's ever going to be any smaller than it is right now. Listen to this expression of winter. Psalm 88, David again, he says, "I cry to you for help, O Lord. In the morning my prayer comes before you. Why, O Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? Why do you hide your face from me?" Now, do you understand the pain behind that phrase? I mean, why do you hide your face? What? I mean, there's pain there. I remember when our oldest daughter, Elise, was real little, not even a year old yet, and she'd wake up in the morning, and if we weren't there, she would just kind of, she'd start crying, or actually, she didn't cry. She would just do one of these. She would just kind of cry out, "Mom, Dad." And you just kind of like lay there, and you know, you'd wake up in the morning to that, because Lord knows you didn't need an alarm clock during that phase of your life. Well, sometimes we'd wake up, we just lay there, you know, and we just listen, "Mom," and we would just basically, you know, start arguing who's going to get up, you know, and we'd lay there and we'd listen to this little baby, not even a year old yet, calling out, "Mom, Dad." I mean, it was torture on a lot of levels. It was torture. But I mean, you just knew that there was no way in the world you could just leave that little baby in there crying. Which is why I can only imagine that one of the most painful things in the world for a child is to cry out to a parent in just utter vulnerability. And not just have that parent not hear them or not be available, but to have that parent deliberately look the other way. I mean, it's almost unthinkable, isn't it? But see, it's the kind of pain that the psalmist is expressing here. God, why do you hide your face from me? And you know, that has to be the hardest part of winter. Because, see, I don't think that it's just that I'm in transition and I'm just moving from one era of my life to the next, or I'm just scared and I'm just not sure what's going to happen, or just that life is hard or painful. Man, the hardest part of it all is that I just can't seem to find God. I cry, I moan, I reach out, but he just doesn't seem to answer me. Which is why I think that this season is the hardest of all of them. So I want to take a few minutes this morning, and I want to talk about this season. Let's unwrap this season, and let's learn whatever we can about it. But first, I want to ask the question that all of us would love to find an answer for. Here's the question: can I avoid winter? I mean, is there a way to just kind of like navigate my life so that I can go through it winter-free? I mean, surely there's got to be like some book out there like 5 Steps for Winter Avoidance. It's got to be out there somewhere, right? I mean, surely. And see, I pose this question because I know that there are these sunny types among us who believe that if we're just clever enough or strong enough or think positively enough that we can live in perpetual summer. Others of us might have this thought that, well, if you just have enough faith, then you can remain winter free. Or we want so bad to believe those big-haired preachers on TV when they tell us to give a certain amount of money to their thing, and if you give to their thing, that you will never experience anything but summer. Man, we all want to find ways to avoid winter, don't we? All of us. But when you begin opening up the scriptures, you find that this is just not how it works. In fact, Jesus, the one we follow, said it himself. He said, here on earth, you will have many trials and sorrows. Man, there's even a time in the scriptures where Jesus himself cried out to his Father with these words, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why do you hide your face? I mean, Jesus said that. So see, here's what we need to understand as followers of Jesus. That there is just no way that I can engineer my life in a way that makes it winter free. You will experience winter seasons. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Oh, come on, Scott. Man, listen, dude. First of all, why do you got to talk about this stuff? Don't you know? Man, the church could grow so much faster if you just talk about positive stuff all the time. Man, but see, look, this is the reality. And sometimes reality is tough. And so in winter, one of the things that I learned is that I am not running the show. See, in summer, it can be pretty tempting for me to think that because of my success or, you know, my wealth or my reputation or my intelligence or my virtue or my faith, whatever, that I'm in control, which is why things are going so well for me, right? Yeah. But then all of a sudden when winter comes, what happens? All of a sudden, all the leaves are gone. And suddenly, you can see a lot farther in winter, can't you? And so we might as well just get it settled that there's just no way, no matter how clever, how strong, or how smart you and I might be, that we can live a life that's going to be winter-free. We just can't do it. And so here's another winter observation. In winter, okay, you will be tempted to isolate yourself. That's right. When it's winter, you will be tempted to go into a type of spiritual hibernation. But I hope that if there's anything you hear me say this morning, it's this. Please don't allow that to happen to you. Because here's the thing. In winter, you will probably never desire community less, but you will probably never need community more. Because you and I were made for community. And man, when you experience winter, you will never want community less, but you will never need it more. Which is why I'd like to encourage you, if you're in a place in life where you just are not a part of a community of people who love and care about you, you need to become a part of a community like that. You need that now. Don't wait until winter rolls around. Do it now. Get involved. Get a part of a small group. Get around people that you can do life together with. Yeah, I don't know why it's like this, but I lived in Minneapolis for about 9 years, 8 or 9 years, and you know, it's kind of weird because when I lived there, I don't know why, but I started observing right around fall, every you know, nature would just sort of be getting ready for winter, because they knew that winter was coming. In fact, when I was in college living in downtown Minneapolis, for some reason there were these squirrels. Everyone thinks they're cute, okay, until you see the ones that lived in front of my apartment. Okay, first of all, I kid you not, it was like three-quarters of all the squirrels in Minnesota live right in front of my apartment. Somehow, like in this one tree, that was their home. And the worst part of it all was that they were like all demon-possessed. Oh, it was horrible. At least they were crazy, okay? They were huge. These things were like, it was like they were like squirrels on steroids, you know? I mean, these things were gigantic. But see, they'd be getting ready. They'd be gathering nuts. They'd be going nuts. They'd be gathering nuts because they knew that winter was coming. Oh, and then up in northern Minnesota, the bears. Oh, the bears would be getting ready. They'd be eating more. Thank God the bears weren't in front of my apartment, but they were there. They were in Minnesota. And the birds, the birds were going to Miami. They were out of there, man. The entire animal kingdom would be gearing up. They all knew, except for one species, human beings. That's right. It's totally predictable. You watch every year when the first snowfall hits, suddenly Target, Menards, and Walmart is completely sold out of shovels and snowplows. Oh, yeah. It's as if people like say to themselves, oh, my gosh, it's the middle of December and winter came. Who would have ever imagined that this was going to happen? That's crazy. People get offended at the first snowfall. They're like, oh, can you believe it's snowing? Well, yeah, it is mid-January. Hello, McFly. Doot, doot, doot. And winter will come. It will. And you're going to need relationships. You're going to need to be a part of a community of people who love and care about you. So the time to prepare is right now. Maybe this morning you aren't necessarily in winter yourself. Maybe you know someone in your life who's going through a winter season. So what do you do? What do you say to someone who's hurting? What do you say to someone who's grieving in their life? Well, let me show you something from the Old Testament story of Job, which again is one of those wintry books that I was talking about a minute ago. And as many of you know, Job, if there's anybody who knew about winter seasons in their life, it was Job, man. He was the guy. Job had lost everything. He had lost his wealth, his occupation, his standing in the community, his servants, his family, even his health. And he ends up sitting on a heap of ashes, scraping scabs off of his skin with broken pottery, while his wife is in the background telling him, curse God and die, honey. It's not a pretty picture. He has lost almost everything. But he does have a few friends. Let me show you this. Job 2:11. When Job's three friends, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar, the Namathite, Dadgum, the Termite. I'm just kidding. I made that one up. Just threw it in there. Huh? Dadgum, the Termite. It just sort of fits, doesn't it? I've been waiting all week to say that. All week. It's even highlighted. Dadgum, the Termite. Anyway. It says here, look, okay, verse 11, they set out from their homes and they met together by agreement to go and sympathize with him and comfort him. When they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him. They began to weep aloud and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights. No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. 7 days and seven nights, no one said a word to Job because they saw how great his suffering was. Now, is it just me or does this seem sort of ironic? Because see, look, first of all, doesn't it seem that we actually tend to say more words when someone's hurting? Think about that. It's true. I say words because I want to fix you. Right? Oh, I want to say words. I say words because, to tell you the truth, sometimes I don't want to feel bad. So if I can get you to stop feeling bad, then I don't have to feel bad. Right? Or I say words sometimes because I want to help, but I don't really know how, so I just say something. Sometimes someone who's in deep pain will say to me, why? And Scott, why? Why is this happening? And all I can say is that I've been doing this long enough to know that I have no answer clever enough to take away their pain. And it's funny because I think that one of the most often violated commands in Scripture was written by the Apostle Paul to a group of Jesus followers in Rome when he said these words, mourn with those who mourn. And you know, it's interesting to me that even though Paul is writing to a group of fellow Christians or Christ followers, he doesn't say, okay, here's what you do, okay? Give advice to those who are hurting so that they can make sense of it all. No, he doesn't say, okay, find an explanation to give to people who are in mourning so that they'll better understand it. No. Job's friends, they were just there. They were just with him. They were present. 7 days and seven nights, they just mourned. And part of the reason I think we have trouble with this is because you can't mourn with somebody in a hurry. But you can give advice in a hurry. Now, you could say something cheerful in a hurry, but you can't mourn in a hurry. You know, as a pastor, I've had my share of just sitting with countless numbers of families through major tragedies that have hit their lives. And you know, it's funny because people who don't necessarily know a lot about ministry, or maybe they're just new to the whole church thing, you know, they'll say, man, you know, gosh, it's got to be fun to be a pastor. Woo! Man, get to those videos. Your jeans to work. Man, you know, you seem like you're always having fun. Man, the music, the speaking, you get to travel once in a while. That's ooh. And all I can say in response to that is, you know what? There's a lot of things that people just don't ever see. Like the time I had to go to a family's house and sit down with their two little boys to tell them that their daddy would never be home again because he committed suicide. Or the time that a young couple had just delivered their first baby. And minutes later, we're told by the doctor that their baby had a rare birth defect and that the baby would not live past an hour or two. And I'll tell you, I sat down with that young couple whose parents were on their way from out of town and never made it to see that baby alive. And they asked me to take that baby and hold her and to just pray. And so I did, and we just sat. And we just prayed and we just cried together. That's it. There were no words. There's nothing I could say to them that would erase their pain. See, here's something I've learned. The greatest thing that you and I can do when we are with those who are suffering or grieving is not to try to come up with the perfect words or try to come up with some sort of slick-sounding spiritual cliche. And the best thing that you and I can do is to just take the time and just be there. Period. You know, one of the things that I think is helpful to say to people when they're grieving or when they're going through a tough time is to just be able to say to them, man, I'm sorry. I can't even imagine what you're going through. Because, you know, it's funny because I remember when my dad died, you know, we were just in such shock and grief. And you always have people, I mean, their hearts are right, but, you know, they'll give you a hug and they'll say, oh, I know. And you just want to look at them and say, no, you have no idea. Who have you lost in your life? No one? And you think you know? I mean, even now, when I have people in my life who lose a loved one, I've been through that now, but I can't say that I know because everybody's experience is different. And it's funny because if you know the story of Job, and you know that his friends, they go on to sort of start saying a lot of things to him, and they start giving him a lot of well-meaning advice and explanations, and basically they all get in trouble with God. See, they were at their best when they said nothing. And sometimes, usually is the right word. Usually, you and I are at our best when we say nothing. Mourn with those who mourn. That's a command of Scripture. Now, let me leave you with one last observation about this season. When you go through winter, and again, you will go through winter. When you go through winter, you must tenaciously cling to hope. Everyone say hope. And I say this because, see, people in winter are often prone to wonder, will this winter ever end? I mean, will it ever be finished? Let's do a quick climate survey here for a second, okay? And I'm talking about physical weather here now, okay? How many of you are the types of people that you are basically ready for winter to be over before it even starts? How many of you would say, yeah, that's definitely me? Okay, that's what I thought. Most of you. I mean, think about this. I mean, this is ridiculous. Okay, winter is the only season of the four that we are so anxious to get rid of that we actually have like this national semi-holiday for a rodent to predict our meteorological future. I mean, we don't do that for summer, do we? Or spring? When will it be over? That's what we want to know. And people in winter, that's the question. And some of you have been in winter for a long time. You know, I think of people who I know in my life who just seem to face one tragedy after another. It's like they just when they think they've gained some momentum in their life, boom, something else hits them. Another tragedy spilled out in their lives. I mean, and I can't even imagine the struggle of their lives. I mean the utter hopelessness that must just seem to invade their minds during those times. So see, when you're in winter, it feels hopeless. It feels dark. You feel useless. But see, here's what I know. And here's what I see that the scriptures teach. When you push away all of the emotions, and when you push away all of the pain and all of the tears, this is what my faith claims. Something is happening even in winter. Something is happening. And you may not see it because mostly it's going to be underground. But everything is not dead. Because see, things are taking root in winter. And things are being prepared. And when the time is right, there will be new life. But you must hope. The psalmist David, who knew a lot about winter, put it like this: weeping may go on all night, but joy comes with the morning. People in winter, I think need hope for two things. One of them is that they need hope that God will one day bring something good out of winter. And this is what the scriptures mean when they say that God redeems even suffering. God will redeem suffering. And this is what I believe, and this is what I hold on to every day of my life. God is all about redemption. He is all about making wrong things right. And I have to believe that part of what makes heaven, heaven, is that it is a place where everything that went wrong in life and that caused hurt and caused such grief and pain is a place where all of it is made right. You know, when I think about my daughters, and when I think about my little nephew and my little niece who's on her way, and when I realize that these kids are going to grow up not knowing one of their grandfathers and other grandparents who have gone and who are no longer with us, when I think about that, it hurts. And it brings a lot of pain into my heart. But then I remember something. I remember that God is all about redemption. And that He is all about making wrong things right. And I have to believe that in the case of my dad, in the case of some of you who've lost loved ones, whatever has been lost in my life, or in my children's lives, or even the life of my mother as a result of him being gone, I have to believe that because God is all about redeeming suffering and making things right, I have to believe that one day it will all be made okay. Because that's what redemption is all about. And until then, there will be other ways that God redeems pain and suffering. It's not just something that I think, well, one day when we get to heaven, God will make things better. I believe it can happen now in this life. Not overnight, but I believe it can happen. God can start putting the pieces back together again. So let me encourage you today to hope. Hope that God will bring something good out of your winter. And hope and believe that one day God will make everything okay again. And not just okay, but that He will redeem and fulfill everything that was lost. When you came in today, you were given a fork. And I hate to tell you this, but we're not serving pie. Would you take your fork and put it in your right hand? If you need a fork, raise your hand. Let's get some forks for these folks. Just keep your hand up. We'll get you a fork. Just go ahead and take that fork and put it. Just put it in your right hand. I read some time ago about a woman who was diagnosed with cancer and had been given, I think it was about 3 months or so to live. And her doctor told her, look, he said, if you're going to make preparations to die, this would be the time to do that. And so she called the pastor of the church, and she told him how she wanted to arrange everything in advance for her funeral. And she decided that she was just going to kind of lay it all out in advance, and she told him what song she wanted to have sung. She told him what scriptures that she wanted to have read, what she wanted to have said at the funeral, and she told him that she wanted to be buried with her favorite Bible right there by her side. And I've been through those times. Those are very sobering moments. But then she said something that's sort of interesting to him. She goes, and there's just one more thing. And he said, well, what's that? She said, well, this is important. She says, so pay close attention. I want to be buried with a fork in my right hand. And then the pastor didn't quite know what to say to that. I mean, what do you say, you know? What? Like, are you a part of something we don't know about? And he, of course, never heard that before. And so he said, why? Why do you want to be buried with a fork in your right hand? She said this, well, in all my years, going to church functions and going to people's homes, my favorite part always came whenever the person who was cleaning off the table would lean over to me and say, you can keep your fork. She went on to say, it was my favorite part because I knew that it meant something great was coming. And it wasn't Jell-O. It was something with substance. She said, cake or pie, you know, biblical food. So I just want people to see me there in my casket with a fork in my hand after I'm gone. And I want them to wonder, what's with the fork? And then I want you to tell them something better is coming. So the pastor hugged her goodbye, and just a few days, weeks later, she passed away. And at her service, people saw all the things she wanted them to see. They saw the dress that she had chosen. They saw the Bible that she loved, and they sang the songs she had picked out. They heard the scriptures read and all of that. But they kept asking the same question, what's the deal with the fork? And the pastor explained to them that she wanted everyone who loved her to know that for her and for anyone who chooses to follow and love Jesus, this is not a day of defeat. And that sorrow comes at night, but joy comes in the morning. And this is my hope. And so I have some homework for you this week. Especially if it's winter in your life. This week, every time you sit down for a meal, every time you sit down to eat breakfast or lunch or dinner, starting with the meal after today, I want you to take a moment and I want you to look at your fork. And I want your fork to become almost like a little icon for you. And I want you to remember the woman who is buried with a fork in her right hand. It was the last thing her right hand ever held. And I want you to remember the promise of that fork. Something better is coming. And I want you to remember hope. And I want you, no matter how long or dark your winter has been, I want you to keep fighting and hoping every day of your life that God gives you on this earth. And I want you to remember that winter may be hard, it may be unavoidable, it may be deeply painful, but it is not final. And sometimes it may seem like it'll never go away, but one day it will. Because even now, here and there, spring shows up. And that's next week. So would you bow your heads with me this morning as we pray? God, you're so good. You're so good because you're an honest God. You're a God who talks to us about our lives and not just in a way that addresses the great summer seasons of life or spring, but you're a God who addresses even those tough times like winter. God, I thank you for your promise that says that you never leave us. You never forsake us. And whether we're in a season of celebration and joy in our lives, or maybe we're going through just a bitter, bitter cold winter, one thing does remain constant, and that is that you are with us every step of the way. Help us to remember that, God. Amen.